Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Outspoken with White and Jordan. 100% engagement.
It's a total disrespect.
Download, stand well back, listen.
Jim White and Simon Jordan.
I don't see that view.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. I'm Jim White, and today myself and Peterborough owner Darren McAntony discuss the gap between the Premier League and the EFL. Is it widening? Darren looks at ways to improve things. Elsewhere, can you plead poverty as a football club on one hand whilst taking a pay rise on the other? Are club owners robbing Peter to pay Paul? And we talk boxing with Spencer Oliver and chief executive of Boxer Ben Shalom. Fraser Clark versus Fabio Wardley. Did it deliver on every level? Do all roads lead to a rematch now? We hear from Fraser Clark himself. You're listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. We saw Arsenal fairly easily go top, with City keeping pace after victories over Luton and Villa respectively. So that's how it's looking, and now the ball is in Liverpool's court. Liverpool look to leapfrog to the summit again tonight. This from Pep, but first let's hear from Mikel Arteta.
I cannot really remember how I was feeling last year. I was very excited. We kept going. We tried our best. At the end, we didn't do enough to win it, and sometimes you just have to recognize the quality and the consistency of other teams like we did, and try again and go again, and here we are.
We have to try to do our job and don't regret, oh, we should have won that game, and because they lost after. We were out of the title race 3-4 days ago, and the team was not playing good. The team was not playing like previous seasons, on the last 6 seasons. So now, 2 days after, we are in the best form of the league. Come on, guys.
So they won, didn't they? Arsenal won when they had to. City won when they had to. Dara, it's fair to say you want Liverpool to win it.
Cool,
because
I'll be watching that
tonight, you're a lifelong Liverpool fan.
I am.
Is it going to go right to the wire, do you think?
I've been saying all season on my podcast that I thought Man City by 10 points. So I've been wrong about that. I would love for Jurgen's final season for him to win the league title. They've deserved his football and the way they've done it. Any other time, they would have won 3 titles over the last 6 or 7 years. So it would be poetic for him to finish with a title. But Man City are like, they're like the Darth Vader of the football world. They're always there. You just know that, you know, when it comes to the business end of the season, Pep, you know, they're just going to win every game in front of them. So unfortunately, I do think Man City could win the treble again this year. They're the best team in the world.
They could win the treble again this year.
I think so, yeah.
I mean, because they are so damn good.
Yep.
If the title ends up in Manchester for the 5th time in 6 years, mm-hmm. is that something of an anticlimax?
You can say yes and no, but when you look at some of those races, they've gone to the final day. Liverpool, I think, twice have been pipped on the final day. So, you know, you can almost, yeah, the argument for everyone would be, oh, Man City, by their way to titles, and it's over and done by March. But that's not always the case when you look back in time. Over those 5 or 6 years, it's always been Liverpool have been there and thereabouts. Obviously, last season wasn't good for them, but I think this could go to the final day. I think it'll be one of the most exciting finishes, but I just think City, with their experience, the way their players talk as well about being zoned in now for the final 6, 7, 8 games, I would love Liverpool to do it. I don't think I love what Arsenal are doing. I love the fact they've gone young. I said a couple of years ago they will win titles with Arteta.
Yeah.
And if not this year, they'd be heavy favourites next year, particularly if they add that striker they need. I just think it's Man City. But that person inside me, since I was 9 supporting Liverpool, would give anything for Liverpool to win the league this year.
You know, I think of you, and you talk like a Premier League chairman, I've got to be honest. Sure. You talk like a Premier League owner.
I wish I had their money.
But Peterborough United is a club you love. It's your club. and it's an EFL club. Is the gap getting bigger, though, between the Premier League and the EFL?
Oh, yeah.
Day by day by day, week by week.
Every day, every season, it is getting bigger. It's getting more difficult. It's and I'm not sitting here like some of the other EFL owners who you know, moan and whinge and whatever else about what we don't have. There are lots of things I'd like to fix in the game, and it's not just about wanting more money off our overlords. It's about things like the loan system, how it's wrong. You know, we get charged and we pay for accommodation and we pay this and we pay that. Simple little things. If we sat around a table, we could fix loads of things with the help of the Premier League.
Yeah.
And there are clubs in the Premier League we work with. Like, we work with Man City, and they are brilliant to work with. First club I've found in years to work with on loans. It's not about money. It's not about accommodation. It's not about the player playing. They are fantastic to work with. And we
feel... they genuinely want to help you.
Absolutely. They gave us a player this year. We'll have probably a couple next year. We forged a relationship with their 21s, their academy, and we just found them a breath of fresh air as opposed to other clubs who it's just all about money, money, money. And you know, that's not what it's about when you loan young players out. You want them to play. You want them to progress. And you want to make sure the club who's helping you do that, i.e. a League One club, you're not cutting them off the knees, making them pay full wages, making them pay till the end of June all the wages, all those things.
Yeah.
And we've had that happen to us. So then the TV, the deal, the money, and lots of owners in the FA.
But the redistribution deal still remains to be done, though, Dan.
It needs to be resolved.
Clubs like Peterborough still wait to find out what they're going to get from the Premier League.
It should have been closed already.
That annoys other people that it's not done.
I agree. It should have been done. And we should have gotten a room, not come out of the room until a deal was struck. And that's gone on too long. And the longer it goes on, the worse it gets and the more power they feel they'll have. But I'm not of that type that's going to sit here and criticise all the Premier League owners, because that's not going to help us get a deal.
Well, he's a man you know, and I know him, the Charlton co-owner, one time at Sunderland, Charlie Methven. And he was talking about the Premier League and the lack of the deal and who needs to do what.
I'd say just ask them to grow up and remember that these clubs, the clubs that they run, were very recently Football League club members. And the fact that in the game of musical chairs, they're currently sat in the seats where they're currently sat, doesn't mean that at some point their clubs won't be back in the Football League and in a position where an equitable distribution of English football's total revenues would actually be an extremely welcome thing to them.
I mean, he's not wrong, is he? Some of these Premier League individuals must realise, well, it could be us in the EFL soon.
Of course. 100%.
So Charlie Methven's not wrong there.
I don't disagree with what he's saying.
But you looked at the heavens as soon as you heard his voice.
Yeah, that's just about him. But, you know, Palace obviously, you know, been in the EFL. Forest have been in the EFL. Some of those clubs, Bournemouth obviously, the one that strikes you the most because of the size of Bournemouth and the fan base and the romantic story of going from nearly out of business to the Premier League and now don't want to maybe do a deal. But I think you tell people things like that message there, they don't want to listen to you. The minute you start not insulting them, but, you know, preaching to them, they're going to shut up their ears. So we need to sit in rooms together with a respect across from each other and go, look, this is happening whether you like it or not. This is going to happen now. The government are intervening. So why don't we do this where it works for everybody? The Premier League have come out and said, we don't want to do this because we think you'll spend all the money on players and agents. I agree. So there's strike one.
So let's put
in the deal. No, let's put in the deal. Any money we get, it goes towards facilities. It goes towards our training facilities. It goes towards our academy.
Yeah.
It goes towards reducing debt. It goes towards doing all the things that will help our football clubs in the EFL. Instead of, because that will protect us from them having to give our players pay rises. And having to pay agents more money. Because the agents of players will go, you got an extra £1 million, an extra 1.5, you can give my player £6 grand a week now instead of four. Sorry, part of the deal we signed was we can't allocate that money to player wages.
So you'd give an assurance that any money that came to 100%, you from the Premier League
100%.
Would not go to player wages.
Absolutely.
Or agents.
It would go to infrastructure. It would go to improving everything about the football club, the things we all need to do. Lots of our clubs, 50, 60% of them, have horrible pitches, horrible facilities, bad training facilities, have got too much debt. These are all the things we can improve with that extra bit of funding.
Right.
And that will help our infrastructure and maybe potentially allow us to reduce the price of our tickets.
You see, I mean, Dara, you're talking sense and I get it.
Of course.
The fact is,
that can happen occasionally.
Everybody's got an idea on why this hasn't happened, on why the Premier League haven't agreed with the clubs down the pyramid as to what they're going to get and when they're going to get it. Even the man Jordan chipped in.
The Football League has run itself poorly for a variety of reasons over a significant period of time. And it's allowed the Premier League to disappear into the ether, do what it wants, and now it wants to bring it back into check. And it can't because it's got no leverage. It's got a moment of leverage, which is the independent regulator. So everyone's playing their hand the way they want to. And having sat in Football League meetings and listened to voices like Charlie Methven that think that by shouting out dissent, and once upon a time I was one of them, because it had incompetent leadership. The Football League was run by incompetence. It's not run by incompetence now. It's run by capable operators that are most likely to deliver an outcome. Now, what you don't need is dissenting, self-motivated, further down a pyramid voices suggesting that there's a better way to do it than allowing Parry to finish the negotiation. They don't want to give any money.
Don't want to give any money, says Simon.
So he's not wrong there. And of course, nobody ever wants to give up more money. But they all know it's coming. But look, it's been a couple of decades since Simon's been in one of those EFL meetings. So let me talk about the present instead of the past. We've got some good leadership at the EFL. We've got some really good people.
Yeah, and to be fair, he was saying that.
I've had my own rucks with the people at the EFL over the last couple of years. There's lots of things I'd like to improve. I love the NFL system with a 32 owners sit in a room and basically strike deals and get deals done, and then they have a commissioner. And lots of those owners are involved on media deals. So you've got the moment people in the EFL do our media deals, do negotiating for us. You've got successful owners who've managed to buy football clubs who are worth billions and millions, and very few of them are involved in any negotiation. Some of these people are the best negotiators in the world. I at some point call myself in my 20s and 30s the best closer in the world, because that's what I did for a living.
Close deals.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I've never been involved or invited to help. I would do it on my own free will. I'd pay my own flight fare.
Yeah.
Use us. But that's the only thing I'd say. Use us.
The clubs in the EFL, you're not all one voice, are you?
No, and that's a bigger problem. When we have annual meetings, it's always CEOs who always go to those things. We need owners' meetings. I don't care if you get half the owners in a room, the other half are on Zoom. I don't care if some of them are faceless, but behind a blank screen. We need all the owners because they're the decision makers. When you get people who are in a room who have to go running back to daddy and mommy to get decisions, things can't get done fast enough.
Let me ask you a straight one. If you're sitting here today with me and you were a Premier League owner,
sure,
would you want to chip in for a club like Peterborough United?
Absolutely. Absolutely, because I know, having living in America, dealing with the MLS and where they get it all wrong, because they don't have a pyramid and they don't appreciate what's below them, and that's why they don't have the TV deals that we have over here. I know everything about our institution, our industry, which I've called a trillion-dollar industry, is built on the pyramid. It's built on the success of, you know, the Lutons of the world and all the eyes that get brought in there. Why do you think some Americans run along and buy and spend millions of pounds on a club in non-league? The romance of the game. I know what we're worth. I also know what we've done for players who've come out into the EFL and have been born in the EFL and gone on to play for England. I know what we do for the Premier League. I appreciate all the owners in the Premier League don't want to give up any more money. They don't want to give some crumbs off the table.
Right.
But respectfully, they're going to have to. And the word compromise is going to have to be used.
So just to recap.
So let's stop insulting them.
Yeah.
And let's try and sit down like men and grown men and women.
You didn't like Charlie Methven saying, grow up. No,
but
didn't like that.
Charlie's a new owner. I think he's a minority owner of Charlton or whatever else. You know, I want majority owners sitting at tables doing deals.
Download, stand well back, listen.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Earlier in the week, Darragh, you said, yeah, you know, you defend top flight clubs putting up ticket prices amidst fan protests. You're like, if it has to be done, there's a good reason for it. Yeah, fair to say?
Fair to say. I mean, I was obviously, you know, said a little bit more than that, but, you know, your headline makes sense, yes. I'm not against it, because we're living in a world now where, you know, you run as a business, you're losing millions of pounds, and unfortunately the fans end up paying the price.
Well, I think your actual words were clubs are bleeding out their eyes. Mm. Tottenham announced season ticket prices would increase by 6% for next season, with the most affordable adult season ticket costing £856, up from £807. Interesting, though. The increase in season ticket prices is because they only have raised prices once in the last 5 years by 1.5%.
Fair play.
And there had been, quotes, a significant increase in match day costs.
Yep.
So why does Daniel, good friend of Simon's, Daniel Levy, why does he have to pay himself a sizable bonus? He had a pay increase from 3.2 million to 3.5 million.
Sure.
While taking home a £3 million bonus.
Sure, because in the world we live in...
His annual package, rose to £6.58 million last season. A £3 million bonus.
Yeah, we're dealing in, like I said to you, in a billion and trillion dollar industry. What do you think CEOs get paid? What do you think people at massive companies that are worth billions get paid? I mean, listen, I'm not here to defend Daniel Levy. I've had my own battles over the years, you know, with him and whatever else. So I'm no great friend of his.
Who won them?
I don't brag to be.
Did he win the battles?
I would say it was 50-50. But the reality is Daniel Levy has a contract with Spurs. I know he's a minor shareholder. He doesn't own, you know, he's not a majority shareholder, but he's the guy who's the CEO. He runs the ship. He will have a contract. In his contract, will have incentives and bonuses. So, Jim, let me ask you this. If you achieve all those bonuses and hit all those targets and you're due your bonus, would you hand it back? Would you say, no, I can't have that because we've put the prices up somewhere? Or that won't look good publicly in the optics of it. So don't give me the bonus this month. You take that money, you'd be out here in a heartbeat.
Maybe if I'm going to take my $3 million, I wouldn't be charging the fans anything more.
And you say that, but at the end of the day, I always say walk in somebody's shoes for a day. You know, this is the business.
But you can see what it looks like.
No, of course I can see the optics around it, and you knew that was going to happen.
You're stopping concessions, and in the meantime, I'm taking a £3 million bonus.
I understand that the optics suck, but this is real life we're talking about. There are CEOs out there who get paid 50, 60 million a year, and their companies have lost money in their quarterly results. But they have work contracts. I've got people on contracts with me, and if they hit targets, they make money. If they win a cup this Sunday, they all get a bonus. Just because I'm going to put season ticket prices up, should I come out the next day and say, well, actually, Barry Fry doesn't deserve his bonus or the manager for winning the cup trophy?
But this is at a time when you yourself say clubs are bleeding out their eyes.
But he's an employee of the club.
Well, they can't be bleeding that much at Tottenham if he can take home a £3 million bonus, which, as you rightly say, is in his contract. But he doesn't need to if financially times are so tight.
And you might be right if he was 100% owner. I would say the optics are horrible. But you're an employee with a work contract, and by the way, I believe he hasn't had one in 5 years. So there has been a period of time where he's foregone any kind of bonus. He's opened a magnificent stadium. They've obviously hit metrics targets. They've done well as a club the last 12 months with obviously hiring Ange. So he's obviously due a bonus that's hit a target in his contract, and he's got paid. Like I said, what's he meant to do? Say no?
Maybe.
Okay, but again, I would say he's not the majority owner. He works for somebody. I cannot see you, our Lord Jordan, ever turning down a bonus that you actually hit in your contract.
It's just hard to square the circle at the start of the sentence where you say, now, money has never been so tight as it is in football right now.
Sure.
Hence, we have to rein in and remove the concession for new senior season ticket holders.
It's easy in the media.
65 and above.
It's easy in the media. It's not hard when there's an agenda around that. It works perfectly. In the same week of fans are up in arms about this, and this, suddenly a big nasty CEO pays himself a few million quid bonus. So that's easy. It fits into the whole agenda. But one doesn't necessarily go with the other. You have to separate them. So I've got a CEO of Peterborough at the end of the day. She doesn't own a football club. She's a CEO. If I turn around and sit there and say to her tomorrow, look, we have to put the season tickets up on our older fan base because they're the wealthier fan base. How do you feel about that £20,000 bonus that you were due if you hit attendance numbers this year? You've hit the attendance numbers. Because Jim White doesn't agree with it because I'm putting the prices up on the OAPs, can you forego the £20,000 you're due?
I'm not the one that's protesting.
But I was going to ask you a question. What should she and her right say back to me?
The decision would be hers
No.
I wouldn't tell her what decision to make.
You know that's wrong. You know you turn around as an employee. If that was your daughter or if that was your friend, you turn around and go, no, that's in your contract. You're due the money. Take the money.
What does this look like, though, to you? What is it, the optics of it, if you like? And I would emphasise, Dara, there is no agenda. It's very amusing.
That winds you up when I use the word agenda.
No, when we hear, it's too easy for people outside the media. And you're kind of you've got one foot in the media these days. Simon's full square in it.
Yeah.
But when you look at it, you cannot say we're removing the concession for new senior season ticket holders, 65 and above, and then quietly... And not quietly. It's here in black and white. Take $3 million of a bonus.
But you can't if you're an employee. I keep going back to it. I agree with you. If he was 100% owner, I'd say the opposite.
You wouldn't do it, would you?
No, because I would go, I'm due the $3 million bonus. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to wait a few months and take it then.
What, quietly when no one's looking?
Yeah, not quietly, but I've just, because right now Jim White's on there harping on and beating on about it on the radio about the OAPs and all these grannies I've sent away, you'd wait a bit before you awarded it to yourself. You know, the optics are terrible. I would wait a bit. I'd be clever about it. But at the end of the day, like I just said to you, the guy's an employee. He's the chairman of a Premier League football club, one of the biggest in the world, and he gets paid a salary of $3 million. Most of these people, you go to the NFL, the commissioner in the NFL is paid $40 million a year. People in like high positions get paid pretty well.
I get that.
The CEO of Apple earns $250 million a year.
Yeah.
All right. This is the way it works. That's big business, Jim. Outside of this radio studio, there's a lot more going on out there in the real world. And they don't always look at the optics. You're right. But in this case, he's done what he's done.
He's done what he's done. The fans did what they did. They protested about it.
Sure, but it ain't going to make any difference.
It doesn't make any difference.
No.
So in other words, people like myself should just pipe down because that is a fact of life in
the
world. No, the
beauty about our democracy and the world we live in is you are free to say what you want unless you live in Scotland.
I love it. We'll talk a bit more about Tottenham, actually. Did you get on with Daniel Levy when you at the end of negotiation? Was it a fair play, Daniel?
No.
I don't mind having a tussle with you.
It was over a player. It ended up costing me 50 grand. It didn't need to because he at the last minute changed something. So I was quite angry at the time. But it's fine. We have a great relationship with David Pleat, one of my favourite people in football. And he works personally for Daniel.
He goes
out scouting young players. David's great. So, look, I like Spurs. We've had a good relationship with them. I haven't spent a lot of time with Daniel Levy. But I'm not here to defend Daniel Levy. He's big enough and bold enough to do that himself. I just think sometimes it's so easy nowadays to get outraged about everything. This should be called outrage sport.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Download, stand well back, listen.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
So if you are football's first FIFA licensed agent, and when you indeed break into the world of football as a licensed agent, there was nothing like social media around to be worried about. And Jerome Anderson was indeed football's first FIFA licensed agent. And he joins us live in the show, a man I've known for many years. Jerome, good morning.
Very good morning to you, Jim. And a very, very good morning to you, Darren.
How are you, Jerome?
Good morning to you, Jerome. I mean, where do we begin? The world of football agency, how much has it changed over the last few decades since you entered into it?
It's changed dramatically, Jim. If I go back to how I even started in the industry, I can go back to my childhood. As a young, very young child, my father used to take me to Arsenal, which is where I had my great affinity with Arsenal Football Club. And for some reason, the players at Arsenal at that time, the likes of Mel Charles and George Easton, became very friendly with my dad, and they looked to speak to him for advice. He was just a normal working class person, and they just trusted him. But during those early years of my life, I got to hear some incredible stories about how players were treated by not only the managers, but by the clubs, and often saw them in tears. And as a child growing up, it sort of went to my heart, and I thought, if only in the context of my lifetime, I could be able to help players genuinely make the most out of their careers, look after their money, which obviously was comparatively, not peanuts, but compared to what it is today, relatively low amounts of income. And the old story of Alex James, who was one of Arsenal's greatest ever players, selling newspapers on the corner of Avenue Road, it stuck with me for the rest of my life. And I endeavoured throughout the course of my 35, 40 years as an agent to ensure that the people that I was involved with were never in a situation where they stopped playing, that they genuinely had to worry about anything for their future.
I mean, it's fair to say, I know you, Jerome, you've been very successful because you were good at it. It's quite plain and simple. You were good at it. You knew your job and you did it well. You made a lot of money. But it's your belief, though, that players genuinely needed representation.
Absolutely, Jim. I can go back to the late, great Geordie Armstrong, and he had a situation at Arsenal with the late Terry Neill, and he came around to my house one night. I think I was about 15 or 16 at the time, literally in tears, because he was promised something by the club. It didn't happen, and ultimately he left, and from being an absolute Arsenal legend, he used to run up and down that wing incredibly hard for the football club throughout his career. It was something that I never ever wanted to see any of my clients go through. And as I say, genuinely tried to ensure that all the boys that we ever were involved with, when they finally had to hang up their boots, they were looked after, they'd invested wisely, and made the most out of, okay, a bit of a cliche, but what is a very, very short career.
I mean, I look at that. I know, of course, Charlie. I've known Charlie for many years. Charlie Nicholas, you represented him when he came down from Celtic and went to Arsenal. The late, great David Rowcastle. And then, you know, I look at the host of players you've represented. Tony Adams, Ian Wright, Dennis Bergkamp, David Seaman, Emmanuel Petit, Thierry Henry. Were all their stories and their needs and their demands as straightforward as we might think? And also, was it not the case that Bergkamp might well have ended up at Stamford Bridge and not Arsenal?
Well, that's a fascinating story, Jim. I'm not sure if it's ever been told in its entirety or in its truthfulness. Dennis's hero as a young man growing up was Glenn Hoddle. He loved wearing the number 10 shirt. And finally, having suffered, you know, a difficult time in Italy, he decided that he'd like to come and ply his trade in England. And I worked very closely with his Dutch agent, and we did a number of very, very good transactions together and brought some exceptional players to England. And Dennis's situation was this. He had agreed, and we all had agreed in principle, for him to sign for Chelsea.
Wow.
And literally, on the day of Dennis coming over with his wife, and as we all know, he wouldn't fly anymore, so he was driving. I got a phone call from the then managing director, Colin Hutchison. He said, "Hi, Jerome, how are you?" I said, "Fine, thanks, Colin." He said, "Do you want the good news or the not so good news?" So I said, "Well, just give me the news as it is." He said, "Look, we still want to sign Dennis, but unfortunately, we don't have the money." And that was a real shock of a phone call, having worked on that for a long time. Anyway, I put my thinking cap on. I thought, right, we've got Dennis coming over from abroad with his wife, who's driving. It's going to take several hours. So I phoned his personal Dutch agent. I said, explained what had happened. I said, "Well, I've got an idea." I said, "Would you give me permission to try and speak to an institutional club, which was Arsenal?" And he said, "Of course." So I put the phone down. I phoned up David Dean. I said, "Look, something's happened today. We may have an incredible opportunity to sign a player who is yet to reach his prime, was well known as a wonderful international player for Holland, but had a difficult time in Italy, and it's Dennis Bergkamp." I said, would you be interested?" So he said, "Well, look, of course, I think we could be interested, but the first thing you have to do is to speak to their manager, who was Bruce Rioch." So I literally got in my car, I drove around to Bruce's house. I'll never forget, he opened the door, I think he had his dressing gown and his slippers on, and I said, "Bruce, I'm really sorry to trouble you. I said, but could you be interested in signing Dennis Bergkamp?" And he looked me straight in the eyes and he went, "Jerome," he said, "if we can sign Dennis Bergkamp, I'll sign him tomorrow." So I then get back in the car, I go back to my office, I made a few phone calls. Bear in mind, Dennis is still driving and he's completely unaware of this situation. So I phoned up Mr. Dean, I went round to his house, went through the whole scenario of what it would take to try and sign Dennis, and tried to explain what I thought it would be a magnificent signing, not only for the football club, but for, you know, English football. He basically knew, because I had such a strong affiliation to Arsenal and knew that I absolutely love the club, that I was genuine in my belief. So David then organised a board. We had a board meeting, which was at his house. We went on for several hours. The late, great Danny Fisman, Ken Fryer, et cetera, were all in the house. And obviously, at the time, it was £7.5 million. It was a fixed fee. Inter Milan would not deviate or change that price. Anyway, after several hours, the board agreed to try and make it happen. I left David's house, went back to my office. It's very, I think, in the early hours of the morning. I phoned up Dennis's personal agent, who was also on his way over, explained the situation. And he said, "Right, let's see if we can make this happen." And Dennis arrived and he was told the truth. And he was upset in the first instance, because as I said, Glenn was his hero and he was looking forward to working with with Glenn, who I said, look, if nothing else, please meet Bruce Rioch, then go to Highbury, have a look around the marble halls and try and understand the history of what is a great, great football club, a true institution. And he agreed to that. And thankfully, he got on famously well with Mr. Rioch, and they enjoyed a fantastic working relationship.
Right. And the rest is history.
Did I beat you
to that line there, Jerome? The rest is history. My God, what a signing he was for Arsenal. Yes, Spencer Oliver has arrived on the scene because it's Thursday lunchtime and that means we talk boxing. Spencer, you've got your work cut out for you today because you're alongside Peterborough United owner Darren McAntony. And I'm looking at the messages coming in this lunchtime. Darren McAntony, is he not just wonderful? Well, he sure is. And alongside Dara, myself and Spencer, we have Ben Shalom, the chief executive of Boxer, top promoter, of course, Ben, in the world of boxing. Gentlemen, good afternoon and you're most welcome.
How are you, boys? You well?
Good, very good.
See you, fellas.
Before I go any further, you love your boxing. You've been some big fights, right, Darren?
Mayweather, Pacquiao, all the fights. Canelo, I've been to every one of his fights the last 4 years. I did Wilder and Fury Vegas. I've done, a lot
he
of fights.
The Vegas.
I did Wembley. I did Tyson Fury at Wembley, but I got attacked front row down there. It was quite lively at the time. Some fella tried to throw acid in my face.
No way.
He was a traveller fella who basically was trying to get in my seat and had a row with him, and he came at me with acid and everything else. It was like, it was a mad night, but crazy. That was Wembley. It got crazy. But no, I do love the boxing.
I'll tell you what, it was a crazy night on Saturday night, that's for sure.
Yeah, that is for sure.
It really 100%. Was. It really was.
Yeah. I tell you, I don't think it was as bad as that in the crowd at the weekend, but certainly on Sunday night, Fraser Clark against Fabio Wardley. Ben, congratulations. What a night. How was it for you?
It was, I've said before, it was exhausting. It was intense. It was one of the best fights I've ever witnessed, never mind promoted. A special night. Both guys deserve a huge amount of credit. It was an incredible card. The way that they sold the O2, the interest that it generated. This is a British title fight.
Yeah.
This is Fraser Clark in his ninth fight. The numbers, everything was incredible, but then they have to deliver. They both left absolutely everything in the ring. I think both of them are still sort of trying to gather their whereabouts. It was such a serious fight. There was so much on the line. You could see neither of them would give an inch, didn't want to lose. Both of them should be so proud of themselves. And I think it's one of those fights that you almost have to take your breath after, because it shows the sport in its most brutal form, but also its most beautiful form, where both of them have just absolutely given their soul.
Okay, and, nobody got the win in the night, Spencer, so they'll do it again. What did you think of that decision in the end?
I thought it was the right decision. Seriously? Absolutely spot on that
decision.
What, did
you say this is going to be a draw?
Absolutely. Well, listen, no, we said it's going to go one way or the other. It could be a round one way career, and it could be a draw. I looked over to Johnny Nelson. I'm going, what way are you going? Because like we go, was it Wardley by a round? Was it Clark by a round? I'm looking at Johnny. Johnny's going, I'm going all level. I'm going for the draw. And you're going, everyone's sitting there going, it's got to be a draw. Yeah. And I know they do it round by round, so you never know how it's going to come out, but you look at, just to echo what Ben said, you look at what those guys done, what they put in, what they left in the ring. I know what that's like to be in there, and like they were fighting on empty from about round five when Fraser Clark went over in round five and the bell rang, he come out, he thought this could be it. Now he come back and it was like a seesaw, back and forth. It will go down in history as one of the best heavyweight British title fights of all time. I mean, like, because of what they done, what they left in the ring. Coming out for round 10, I thought, one of them's got to go. Even when we got into round 12, I went, I'm sure this is going to end now. Where are they finding it from? like you don't realise that the dark place they have to go to find the courage to carry on.
Most importantly, when do we see it again? That's got to be a trilogy, no? Listen, I mean, this got to be like the money involved in this fight now.
It's the biggest fight out there for both of them.
Big time.
100%.
It's got to be pay-per-view, surely, next time.
It will happen again. It will happen again. I thought Fraser Clark nicked it, obviously. I think the point deduction for me was unfair. But then I sat back. I was gutted on the night, but I sat back the next day and I thought, you know what? Neither one deserved it to deserve to lose that. What Fabio Wardley put in,
yeah,
he looked as though he was could be finished at any time. And then a couple of seconds later, he'd be thrown a combination and be the dangerous fighter.
It was incredible. I heard Spence ask you, could it do pay-per-view next time?
I think the numbers that it generated the first time were so good that of course it can. Yeah, of course it can. It's captured the imagination of the public. There's very, very few fights where the narrative takes hold and everyone, it's felt like the whole country was watching that on Sunday night.
And when you look at the brutality that was involved in that fight and you look at, you know, what the guys put on the line for that and, you know, it is prize fighting at the end of the day and you look and you go, everyone would want to see that again. Of course it would be pay-per-view. I mean, that is value for money. Like, that was edge-of-your-seat stuff from round one to round 12. Rarely do you get that, especially with heavyweights.
I think you get it again.
The really striking thing about it, Ben, is that it's a timely reminder, is it not, that we have not lost the value of a great British fight on British soil.
That's what fans care about. And we sat down as a team after, and you know, there's all these talks about world title eliminators and world titles and international titles. But when you sit down and study really what performs, we're looking at the top five viewing figures of the past 10 years on Sky. It's British fights every time that deliver.
Every time.
There's something about it. It's the narrative, but it's also the heart of the British fighters. It's what it means to them. It's what it means to the country. It's a very tribal country where fans really get involved. And you strip it all back, that's what performs. That's what fans want to see. And the amount of boxing fans that will have been created on Sunday night who haven't seen a fight like that for a very, very long time is incredible. And I think that has to be the focus for us now.
Incidentally, why was it Sunday night?
Just audiences. I think Easter Sunday, you had City Arsenal, 4 million people watching. No doubt a lot of them stayed.
It just shows you it can be done.
It was huge.
It can be done.
And obviously the bank holiday Monday and everything like that. It worked perfectly.
Yeah. So how long do you think it will take to get them back in a ring again?
You know what? Selfishly, we were hoping to go again very quickly, but you knew straight away it's going to take some serious time. I think Fabio in particular will need to see how damaged his face is and his nose. I'd like to see it this year. I think we can be hopeful it happens this year. It won't happen in the summer. I don't think they'll be quite ready.
And financially, let me ask you this, because both of them going in, I wouldn't imagine they earned a lot of money for that fight.
Yeah.
I presume fight number two, bigger checks are going to get written.
Yeah, and they both deserve it.
100%. Because that's why you do it.
That's why you do it. Yeah. And they're not stealing the living. They're literally giving absolutely everything for it. Yeah. And they deserve it off the back of that. Both of them do. And that's why a day after, I'm thinking, you know what, the draw's the best result, because they both have now earned probably the biggest payday definitely the biggest payday of their careers, something that they probably couldn't have dreamt of.
Now, Ben, you say that. There's Paul, the Manchester City fan. Spencer Oliver has more faces than a Rubik cube. He said Wardley won by two rounds on Sunday night.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's what I said. I said it was one of those fights that could have gone one way or the other. I had Wardley, around maybe two rounds up going in there. But like you say, you're looking at it, because the rounds are so subjective, you're looking around and you're looking for, I don't know, like you're looking for security of other people. Have I read this right? Where am I going with it? When the draw was announced, you go, I'm so pleased for both fighters because no one deserved to win it.
Download, stand well back, listen.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
One of the two fighters who put on that magnificent show of yours on Sunday night joins us live. Of course, it was a split decision in the end. It was a draw in the end. Fraser Clark and Fabio Wardley. Fraser Clark joins us live from a beach somewhere. Not unsurprisingly. Fraser, where do we find you? Maybe you don't want to tell us where you are.
No, I'm in beautiful Altea, Spain, just down by the harbour. So, just enjoy some time with family.
Fantastic. And we've got your live viewers on YouTube and Facebook can watch it live. How's it been for you since Sunday night? I mean, at the end of it, the two of you beat each other up fair and square. What's it like for you recuperating after a fight like that, Fraser?
Yes, it's challenging, you know, on the body, definitely. It took me a few days, but, you know, I'm feeling better now. It's been a whirlwind, you know, a lot of messages, a lot of well wishes. Which is a bit of a change compared to what I had going into the fight. But it's been overwhelming and very nice to hear some of the beautiful comments, but still a little bit disappointed with the decision. You know, I thought I did enough, but you know, we live and we learn, and I'll definitely build on this.
Do you know what, Fraser? It was one of those fights, wasn't it? It was a ceasefire. It was going back and forth, back and forth. You think 1 minute, you know, he was coming on top, then you was coming on top, and you thought, how long can this go on? You know, can these guys see the final bell? I think us live there on the night, we thought, nope, they're never going to see it. It's one of them's going to have to crack at some point. But the strength of character that you both showed, you looked at it and you go, like, you're weighing it up and you go, right, on the night I thought that Wardley won by a round or two. You watch it back and you go, it's worthy of a draw, because there shouldn't be a loser in that. The only winner in it all really is the boxing fans, because we get a chance, hopefully, to see it again. But I've got to commend you both, mate, for putting on a gladiatorial performance. That was something else, and that will develop you as a fighter. You know, you'll push on from that. You'll take so much strength. That was only your 9th contest.
Yeah, you know, it definitely, it's definitely already taught me a few things. You know, I've not quite watched the full thing back yet. I've not brought myself to do that. But just from being in there and getting that experience, I know where I went wrong. I know when I should have finished the fight. And I probably just couldn't get the shot I was looking for, which is credit to Fabio Ward. You know, he's very, very tough, and he's very durable, because there's one thing being tough and durable. Then there's another thing, you know, fighting back when you took the kind of shots that he was taking. So, no, full plaudits to him. And hopefully, you know, Ben and the team can get together, and you know, I'm definitely willing. I'd love to do it again, because you know, it doesn't quite sit right with me. A draw just feels like a loss to a fighter, I think. So I'd love to get my revenge, and next time I'll get the job done properly.
I saw your reaction actually after the fight, and how down you was over that. You know, I think that like I said to you, it was a gladiatorial from both of you guys, but you was upset that you didn't get the victory. You felt like that, you know, the draw was a loss. So I mean, look, for the boxing fans, for British boxing as well, that to take place, you know, on British soil, I mean, we would love to see that again, and we hope that Ben Shalom, you know, and the team can get that together and we get that rematch.
Yeah, I'm sure it's something that can be talked about and can be done. Like I said, it was just amazing to see the reaction we've had since. And I'm sure Fabio is experiencing the same amount of comments as I am. But ultimately, you know, once you've shared a ring with someone, you want to get out and knowing who's the better man. And at the minute, it's on his even. So if he's got the same mindset as me, then, you know, we need to sort it out. The only way we know how as fighters, and that's to get back in there and trade lever again.
Fraser, brilliant fight. Really enjoyed it. I've got to ask you the question. How quick do you want to get back in there? How quick do you want to get, you know, that must have been so exhausting. No wonder you're on holiday. What's the schedule for the next few months? What's ahead of you?
Well, I've got to be sensible, you know, like we all know that them fights do take a lot out of you, and it was hard on the body. But to be honest, I feel really well considering, I think it's testament to the way that I've looked after myself the last few months. I feel really good. I've recovered well. I'm going to sit down with Ben and the team next week, I'm sure, and we'll have a discussion about it. But, you know, I don't want to be out in the ring for a long time. I like being active. I've had good advice off people, listened to a few good interviews. Dominic Ingle was dead right when he said, you know, you got to build on this and you got to move forward from this. I don't want to sit around too long. Boxing and competing is what I enjoy doing. So this holiday is beautiful, and don't get me wrong, I'm loving it. But, I can't wait to get back to the gym and work on mistakes and move forward, because I know where I can go in this sport, but it's going to take a lot of dedication.
We were making the point earlier on, Fraser, that, you know, you wait. It was quite a wait until this was made, and Ben made the point that was for specific reasons. And it turns out that was the right reason. Lee and Starbridge is saying, Ben, on your show is spot on. A top promoter who cares for his fighters. It's not just about making a quick buck and then moving on. These guys further down the line can make serious money. And now you and Fabio Wardley, who's on Sky right now, quite interestingly, Fraser, looking a lot more marked up than you, I may say. But now you and Fabio can do it again further down the line and maybe make a lot more money than you might have envisaged. And Ben, that is exactly what you want for these guys, because it's them who are putting their necks in the line.
Oh, it's the toughest sport in the world, and I think even Fraser will agree, it's not just about ability, it's about conditioning, it's about being there before, it's about experience, it's about all these things. And that came, to be honest, I was absolutely amazed, and I don't mind saying that as his promoter, that in his 9th professional fight he was able to deal with all the things that he had to deal with in that fight. The knockdown, how he dealt with that, the point deduction that I didn't feel was a point deduction, how he dealt with that mentally, how he goes into those final rounds and finds a second win, how he deals with a guy that just keeps coming back and keeps throwing bombs. And so given the experience, it is an incredible feat, and there's not many people in their ninth professional fight that could do that. But as you say, Jim, it's worked out extremely well. And what Fraser did on Sunday night has catapulted his career, and is going to make him a huge amount of money for the rest of it. And I think, and I'm here thinking, thank God we stuck to what we knew, and we trusted ourselves, and it's worked out very well.
Fraser, you want promoters like Ben and Hearn and the rest to put any kind of personal animosity, if you like. There's competitiveness, of course there is. They're in the same business, and one wants to outdo the other. But you see that for what it is. You want some grown-up talking between promoters to let you guys do your thing, right?
Oh, of course. You know, I think the sense does often come from the promoters, because as fighters, we need to be safe for myself a lot of the time, because if you ask me, Jim, and I'm sure a lot of other fighters, I'll fight anyone on the planet, any heavyweight. I don't fear anyone else with two arms and two legs. And that's probably naivety, but, you know, I think the promoters now... we've seen it happening in recent times, you know, people working together, and it's putting great shows together, and it's giving great opportunities more than that to people like myself that are just lads that went to the gym, you know, to try and make something of themselves, and slowly but surely we're getting there.
Yeah, it's an interesting conversation listening to you, Fraser Clark, talking about, you know, the wanting to get back in there. You're on holiday, you want to have that rest, and you want to get back in there and get the ball rolling straight away again. We were speaking to you earlier in the show, Ben, and you were saying, listen, I think that was taxing on both guys, and it may be later on in the year, if not early next year, that we could get that rematch. But listening to Fraser, actually, it could come sooner rather than later.
Look, I think Fraser's fresher than Fabio. I do think that, but he's still taken a huge amount of... punishment, but, you know, grueling 12 rounds. But I think we've spoken since. This is now about building on it. For me, he's seen a percentage of what he can be.
Sure.
And that's what's exciting with Fraser. You know, he's so early on. He'll build on this. He'll get fitter. He'll get stronger. He'll get more confident. He's got that experience now, and he'll want to get out very soon.
And he's got a fan base growing now, based on what you're seeing.
Huge amount of respect. Exactly. Huge amount of respect.
And now, Mr. Fraser Clark, you can reap the rewards like you're doing right now, sitting in the sunshine in Spain. What's the plan for the rest of the day? I mean, if I was sitting where you are right now, I'd be like a beetroot, mate. I'd need to borrow your Factor 50.
No, we're just in a restaurant at the minute. I've got the kids with me, so we'll go down the beach and have a play in a minute. Nice. And the reason Ben don't want me out so quick is because he knows I'm coming for a few quid now, so he don't want me out too often anymore. But yeah, no, I'm just going to chill out and enjoy this time with the family, because, like I say, you know, this was my first real training camp, and unfortunately, your family get the back burner for a good 10-12 weeks. So it's time to now just spend some time with them. Enjoy them. I'm getting the looks from the missus now. You know, this is my last call today.
The boss.
We're going to enjoy ourselves.
Well done, Fraser.
Well deserved, mate. Well deserved.
Listen, Fraser, Ben's with us for the next couple of minutes. Yeah. Text him and tell him what you want. We'll see the look in his face. Thanks ever so much.
The world's most dangerous download.
Outspoken with White and Jordan. From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. Please leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast from. We're back tomorrow to bring you the best of the show.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.